Today in the huddle, joining us for the second time is Colonel Brian Reed, the current Brigade Tactical Officer at the United States Military Academy and former Brigade Commander of the 1st Striker Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division. Our last discussion with him back in episode 14 focused on what a brigade commander expects from their company commanders. Today we are discussing the principles of success for field grade officer assignments. Specifically, we take a deep dive into how officers can prepare for the field grade time following company command. This is the Leaders Huddle Podcast, episode 19, Transitioning to Field Grade Assignments. Welcome to Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am Captain David Wirt, your host for today's episode. With me today, co-hosting this episode, is Captain Wesley Lafitte. Wes, we are setting a first here on the podcast by having our first repeat guest, and I'm really excited to jump into today's discussion and share Colonel Reed's insight on the topic of preparation and success as a field grade.
Absolutely, Dave. I'm pumped as well. Sir, welcome back to the Leaders Huddle.
I appreciate you guys having me. It's good to be here. Thank you.
So, as many of us transition into becoming field grade officers, a lot of us have been doing a lot of reflecting on what that means and how exactly do we best do that. We always have to be thinking about what's next, and for what's next for a company grade officer is obviously becoming a field grade officer. Sir, would you mind discussing a few nuggets of wisdom from your staff in brief to your brigade staff you think might help us as we transition to becoming field grade officers?
Yeah, so... You know, the fact of the matter is the majority of the time that we'll spend as officers in the Army, as much as we want it to be in command, the majority of the time we'll be as staff officers. I can't quote the percentage, but the fact is you'll spend more time on a staff than you will in command. Not that that's bad. That's just reality. And so like I did when I took battalion command, when I met with my brigade staff, I just outlined for them, you know, a handful of things that I thought would be important for them to keep in mind. Because part of, I think, how there's obviously doctrinal manuals and whatnot that outline staff procedures and processes, but I also want them to share a little bit. I wanted to share a little bit with them, sort of my view on my expectations. And so really, I would boil it down to five things that I think are most critical. Again, this is just from my foxhole. So specifically for brigade staff, it's important to focus at the battalion level and make them successful. And you can make the same argument for battalion staffs. You know, you want to make the company successful. At the end of the day, it's about enabling their success, either battalions at the brigade level or companies at the battalion level. The second thing I would tell you that's equally important and that is also critical to enabling the success of the subordinate formations is work well with your higher headquarters and your adjacent units. So at the brigade level, it was important that we maintain good relationships with our division staff partners, as well as adjacent units. So our sister brigades, garrison, and all the other agencies that exist to enable our success. The third thing that I shared with my staff was to make sure they understood they were an extension of me. At the end of the day, there's only one commander, and that was obviously me as the brigade commander. But my staff helps me see myself, see the enemy, see others, etc. The fact of the matter is, at least in my case, in a Striker Brigade combat team, we had a pretty robust staff, so there were a lot of capabilities there that would enable me to be successful as a commander. So it was important for them to understand that they were an extension of me. I wouldn't always agree with them, but nonetheless, they needed to know that they were, in fact, that extension. Equally important and tied to that is my fourth point, and that's be the subject matter expert in your field. Be the SME. You know, truth be told, you got a lot of folks fighting above their weight class on staffs. So, you know, you might have a lieutenant in a slot where typically you know, that's a captain or even a major coded position. You can't let that be an excuse. You know, that young lieutenant's got to be trained to be the expert in his or her field. So if your brigade engineer is an 04 position on a Striker Brigade combat team staff, but in fact you can only pony up a senior first lieutenant or a captain, that officer needs to be, in fact, the brigade engineer and know everything that's expected of him or her. And then the last thing, and this will bring a unit to its knees in a heartbeat, is if you don't have it, is develop good systems and processes and then stick to them. You can't hold your subordinate units accountable for deadlines, suspenses, etc. if you don't have good systems and processes and you kind of make it up as you go along. You know, in my experience, it's been amazing to me when you redeploy a formation from downrange and you reestablish, and the key word is reestablish, processes and systems in garrison. Sometimes you're starting from ground zero because you forget everything that got you there in the first place and you're reinventing the wheel, and it's exceptionally frustrating. So make sure you codify these systems and processes and that you have historical files that you could pass on to other staff officers that backfill you, or, you know, in the case of a deployed formation, you can fall back in on when you redeploy. So those are sort of five things that I would tell you that, from my view, are pretty important for staffs.
Thank you, sir.
Sir, coming up as a junior lieutenant and captain on staff, my battalion commanders would use the term Iron Major a lot. Obviously, that to me sounded like someone who was a rock star S3XO in those field grade assignments. Can you give us your definition of the characteristics of what you think a true Iron Major is?
Sure. Throughout the course of my Army career, what I've heard over time is that, you know, majors run battalions and brigades, and colonels run the Army. I'm not sure how true the latter is in terms of colonels running the Army. Seems like we do a lot of work at times, but majors do in fact run battalions and brigades. I absolutely believe that. There is nothing that happens in battalion and brigade formations without an O4 touching it, without a major touching it. Nothing. Not just in terms of the running of the formation and the day-to-day pieces and parts of all that, but also the development that occurs. You absolutely are the key. One of the key players in terms of the development of company commanders at the battalion level, and lieutenants as well. And you also need to develop not just those company commanders, but to develop the officers and NCOs that are part of your shop. So if you're an S3 or if you're a SPO, you've got a collection of officers and NCOs that need to be developed. So that's part of being an Iron Major. But the truth of the matter is that majors run battalions and brigades, and for that to happen, you need some good folks in there, hence, in my view, the term Iron Major. One of the problems, though, with that term is that it can easily become a misnomer where it means that, you know, you have no life, you have no balance, and you're just, in fact, a workaholic with the goal and end state of making the battalion successful. So while the goal and end state is absolutely true, you've got to maintain balance. You absolutely have to maintain balance, and your commander has to help you with that. It was very eye-opening for me as a young S3, probably my first year of being a 3, when a company commander came in to see me and he told me, "Hey, sir," I asked him what he was going to do next, and he said he was going to leave the infantry and go do something else. I can't remember what it was at the time, but yeah, I was a little surprised by that because he was a 2-time company commander, clearly a guy I think that was going to be a battalion commander someday. And he said, "Sir, don't take this personally, but I don't want to be like you." I try not to take it personally, but his point wasn't that, I don't think, was that I was a bad guy or a tyrant or any of those types of things, but that, you know, I really had no balance in my life. It was all about the battalion, and I was completely out of balance when I did some reflection. So I've been very sensitive to that over the course of my career since that moment, and make sure that we create conditions in our formation that allow our majors and all everyone else, for that matter, to maintain balance and to be balanced. But coming back to your question, Dave, the bottom line is majors run battalions and brigades. They touch everything. The struggle you'll have, though, just a quick sidebar off of this, is you're not the commander. I experienced this myself. Man, you're wed to your great idea. You put together the best training plan ever. And then the brigade commander, battalion commander comes over the top and says, "Well, I see COA 1, I see COA 2, but I want to do COA 3. And you're like, "Man, we just spent a whole week on COA 1 and COA 2. A lot of late nights, blah, blah, blah." And then the commander kind of comes over the top with us. Doesn't mean it was a bad idea, but commanders are commanders. And there might have been something that came out of that drove that. So that could be frustrating at times. It's not personal, but it's sort of the nature of the beast. So I hope that answers your question.
Sir, definitely answered my question, and you actually answered most of the follow-on questions. So I'll just share a little bit. Something I really appreciated about the S3 and XO at my previous battalion was they really had an open door with the company commanders, and they would about every other week try and have breakfast with us. So we have a dialogue on discussing those systems that you mentioned. So that was something I really appreciated, especially being in a peer engineer battalion and having some engineer specific mentorship and coaching. So moving on to our next question, sir. So we often forget sometimes that the battalion and brigade staff is on the HHC's books respectively. Can you speak to us about the importance of supporting the HHC command team on the initiatives, whether it's getting the staff, NCOs, soldiers, and officers to FRG meetings or sergeant's time training? I mean, after all, like I said, the S3 and XO and the battalion brigade command teams are on the HHC's 162s.
Yeah, I sure can. Before I do that, let me go back to your comment, Dave, about the time that your 3 and XO spent with you as a company commander. You know, field grade majors in a battalion, in particular a battalion, it's sort of free chicken, if you will, for a company commander to go and bounce some ideas off of him before he takes it to the battalion commander. So you've got to, but not all of them are going to be open to that. You've got to create the conditions that will make them comfortable to come and see you, and that you won't necessarily laugh at their idea outright, but you could provide them some coaching, teaching, and mentoring, and you could save them from themselves sometimes before they throw an idea in front of the boss and just get shot in the face. Go visit them as well. I learned that as a company commander when my 3, Battalion 3, would just pop in my office. First couple times he did it, I was convinced that I was jacked up. But what I realized was, he was just checking on me, making sure that I was doing all right, making sure the company was doing all right, seeing how I can help, how he can help, and those types of things. So, the more that more time you're able to spend with them, there's just a lot of goodness in it. I'll get to your HHC commander question here in a second. The trick, for field grades, everyone, for the most part, you'll walk into a battalion S3 XO job, depending on your branch, and then you'll fleet up to the brigade level. The trick with brigade, with majors on brigade staff, is you're working typically with battalion commanders or your peers. You're not going to have the same conversation with a battalion commander that you're going to have with a company commander. In fact, you might get a little love from a battalion commander that you obviously would not get from a company commander. I can remember specifically one particular time as a Brigade 3 where I had executed my commander's guidance. That was my talking point anyway, and the battalion that I talked to about it didn't particularly enjoy that, and the battalion commander made it known to me specifically. It wasn't necessarily a bad conversation, but it opened my eyes to the fact that I've got to build relationships with the battalion commanders, and I've got to go talk to them as a Brigade 3. I got to seek them out. And then with your peers, the fact of the matter is, if you're the Brigade 3, the Brigade XO, if you're the Brigade Engineer, if you're the Brigade FSO, again, going back to enabling the success of the battalions, you've got to dialogue with the field grades of those formations and develop good relationships with them. To the HHC commander question, the fact is that everyone, and I mean everyone in the Army, has a company commander and a first sergeant. You're assigned to a company, so be a good member of the company. Now it gets a little different, the higher up you go type thing, but at the battalion and brigade level, do PT with the company. Show up for the urinalysis when you're supposed to. Support the FRG. It's been I'm going to be a little bit hypocritical, because I think when I was a field grade, when I was a major, I wasn't always a good member of the company. And, if I wanted to do PT with my captains, I was going to go do PT with my captains, even though the HHC commander might have wanted to do something else. So I quickly learned that that's not being a good teammate. So be a good member of the company. Support the company. Remember that there's a captain and first sergeant trying to hold it together down there, and they need your support. Frankly, my XO and my deputy commander at the brigade level would just run herd over that if we were deficient, if the staff was deficient in certain things. So you have a commander, you have a first sergeant, be a good member of the company.
Sir, I really appreciate those comments about supporting the HAC command team, because I can relate to that. Having been a commander of an HHB for DeVarde, like, it really helped out having a DCO and a 3 and an XO who were there to go to bat for you and to put a little more emphasis on people whenever you needed them to do simple soldier tasks that they may not have been willing to do on their own. My question after that one, I guess, would be, we're all limited on time and horsepower and the amount of time we have to devote to getting better at these different keys of success you've laid out for us. What traits do you see as more important for company grade officers to enhance while transitioning to working at the field grade level? And then can you share any instances you might remember when someone might have had difficulty transitioning from company grade to field grade level, and why?
So being a field grade is obviously, it's a transition. It's a significant transition in the Army. It's one of the most powerful ones, I think. And I'm always struck by the fact when we promote officers from captain to major, because it is just so distinct. You have absolutely left the company grade realm, and now you're a field grade officer, and the rest of your career will be spent as a field grade. And that means the expectations of you, frankly, are a bit different. Not in terms of leadership. We still expect you to be a good leader. We still expect you to be a good soldier. But the problems that you will solve as a field grade are going to be more complex, and they're going to be different than what we would expect of company grade officers. So you need to be able to solve complex problems. You also need to be a team player. We like to think that we're all good team players at the company level, and we play well left and right with our adjacent unit commanders. But if you don't do that at the field grade level, the unit will fail and others will fail. You've got to be a good team player. No one has the market cornered on good ideas. So share good ideas, share lessons learned across battalions to the division. Be a good team player. You need to stay calm under pressure because that will infect the entire formation. And I can specifically remember a case when we were deployed with 4th ID. I was Battalion XO at the time, and we had our scout platoon in contact, and my boss, battalion commander, was out of the net. So I was in the TOC when the first report came over, the casualties, we were in a fight. I was actually talking to the scout platoon sergeant at the time, and I just made a conscious decision, given the chaos of the fight. And I think by nature, I try to stay calm, and I'm fairly calm for the most part. But in this particular case, to recognize that the effect that I was going to have on that formation could be bad if I got a little excited about things. And what came back, kind of came full circle when this platoon sergeant later that evening and I were talking, and he said, hey, sir, I appreciated sort of your ability to just kind of stay calm in that situation. So you've got to be calm under pressure, and you've got to be calm when you solve these complex problems, because everyone will say, the commander sort of sets the tone. Well, again, you're an extension of the commander, so you need to keep that in mind. I'll probably belabor that point a bit, but I think it's important. I would tell you three other things that I think are pretty critical for field grade officers is you need to communicate well, both verbally and in the written word. The fact of the matter is we use email, and we use a lot of email, and I would throw that into the written word. How you manage email is important, how you respond to email. You've got to remember that not everyone has time, especially your boss, to read the dissertation that you're going to write in response to his email. So keep it short and sweet and to the point and answer the question. If it's just a note for information, then roger, sir, acknowledge all, Wilco, bang, you're done. But that's just one example. But you've got to be able to communicate well in the written word. Make sure that you transmit and relay your point in a way that is succinct. No one's going to read. I learned this, frankly, at CENTCOM, as we wrote a lot of papers for our higher leadership, that being the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. The report that General Austin sent every week that I wrote was the Commander's Update, or his SecDef Weekly. It was one page. It was two pages. It was two pages. The CENTCOM Commander's Report to the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was two pages. There's a great example of being able to write well and communicate your point and your thought in a way that someone can get through. More than two pages, it's going to be hard for people to get through. So writing well isn't just about writing well, passive voice and all that other kind of stuff, but it's about being succinct and to the point. And then verbally being able to express yourself in a mature, professional way. You need to be a decision maker. Sometimes you'll be forced to make a decision without your boss there, and you can't bounce it off him or her, so you got to understand the commander's intent and be able to make the decision and back brief the commander. But oftentimes you'll see field grades kind of get stuck, like, man, I'm not sure what I should do. I got to check with the boss. That's not always available. Execute the boss's intent and move out, but be able to make decisions. And the last thing I would tell you that's important for the transition from company grade to field grade is be part of the solution and not part of the problem. Help your boss figure out problems. Help him solve the problem and come up with a solution. I absolutely encourage my commanders and staff officers to tell me if something was screwed up or wasn't going to work. But my next question to them was, okay, so what's your recommendation? So make sure you're armed with recommendations. I said last one, but I actually have one more. That's be a good mentor. Be a good mentor. You have an opportunity now at this point in your career as you continue to fleet up to battalion and brigade command to touch a lot of officers and NCOs. So be a good mentor. The problems that I've seen with folks transitioning from company grade to field grade really lie around three areas. One is they're really not able to solve complex problems. They can't figure it out, or they can't do it on their own. They need the help of their commander to come to a solution. When really what you're paid for, and not that the commander's not supposed to help, but You're supposed to help your boss solve problems. So being able to solve complex problems is something that I think some officers have a hard time transitioning to. Some also have a hard time being a team player. They're very parochial about the branch, their unit. They don't want to share their good ideas because, they want their unit to look good and do well. It's the NFL, and, we're playing in the big league. So it's the big leagues, big army, big brigade, big battalion. You want to make others successful, so be a good team player. And then the last one, I think that will trip officers up going from company grade to field grade, is the communication piece. Is specifically the written word and how you're succinct in the transmission of your ideas. So it's a lot there, but it's kind of my perspective on it.
Yes, sir. That was a lot, but it was pretty good. It was pretty awesome. So what I'm hearing is, like, being a field grade officer, one of the main things is about being the ultimate team player, like the best team player you ever could be. So that kind of brings me to my next question, which is about balancing the team's needs with the subordinate needs. As company grade officers, we're always taught to take care of your soldiers, and then the soldiers will take care of the mission. Taking care of the soldiers is very important. Obviously, it takes precedence below the mission, obviously, but we're told that that's very important, and we're preached from day one, take care of soldiers, take care of soldiers, take care of soldiers. So a saying that I often hear, especially nowadays, is the team you play for is more important than the team you lead. How do we reconcile caring for soldiers with caring for the organization as a field grade officer?
Yeah, so I actually don't think they're different. I think you do both. The success of the organization and taking care of the organization is inevitably going to be what's best for the soldiers. You could deep dive on a number of different avenues on this one. But at the end of the day, it's still about the American soldier. We had a picture in my brigade 3 had a picture in his office, and it was a pic, and you may have seen it. It was a picture of a soldier, I think from World War II, just, some 11 Bravo getting after it, tip of the spear, and underneath the caption said something to the effect of, remember that the orders that you write, are going to be executed by this guy, something along those lines. So I think it's important to remember that there is a soldier at the end of the spear, at the tip of the spear. So as you put together plans, policies, as you work through problems, someone's going to execute that, and that's going to be a squad, a platoon, a company. So it's important to keep that perspective in mind. Otherwise, you'll come up with something that's just not doable, it's not workable, it's too complex, it's just unrealistic for execution by actual human beings. And that's what we're talking about, is human beings and soldiers. So I don't necessarily think that these are mutually exclusive. To the point about kind of, the team you know, the team that you're on, the team that you're part of, kind of being part of the team that you lead, or being more important than the team you lead, something to that effect. You know, I'm not sure I see it as clean as that. I mean, the team you lead is still pretty darn important, and as important as the team you're on. But it goes back to remembering that you're on a bigger team. And this is a real simple example. But, you know, when I came into battalion command, I remember this specifically. I remember telling my staff that, hey, listen, you have to understand that I'm hardly ever going to say no to something I'm told to do by my boss. And typically it always comes down to kind of red cycle taskings. You know, you'll put together your troops a task to demonstrate that you can't do it. And, you know, that always sort of amused me a little bit when you have a battalion the size of a striker battalion, you know, 700, 800 soldiers, and you're red, or you're not red and you're asked to give up a squad and you can't do it because, oh my gosh, I can't give up this squad. Actually, you can, okay? Yeah. And it becomes just a matter of, well, you don't really want to do it. Well, it's important to my boss and I'm going to say yes. And so actually, frankly, the person that really helped me stay true to that was my sergeant major. And, you know, he helped me because sometimes my knee-jerk reaction would be, you know, those guys at platoon level are screwing me kind of thing. You know, brigade's trying to screw me over. So our major would be like, hey, sir, you know we can do this. Yeah, Roger, I'll get off my high horse and realize that, okay, I need to stay true to what I told everybody. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. It's important, though, to remember, and this is being a field grade, that you're part of a larger team. So if it means that you want to, you know, you want to be the main effort, but frankly, you know, the boss sees your battalion being the supporting effort, well, be the supporting effort and do it real well. Don't get mad, don't get angry because you're not the main effort. There's a reason for it, and be the supporting effort. Range utilization, you know, you got the range, and you know the other battalion wants to get some folks on there, play well with them. Your battalion's important, and they'll shoot well, and you'll get your stats up, but. It's important to be a good team player. So hopefully I answered your question.
Absolutely, sir. Thank you.
Sir, we touched on this a little bit on question one about establishing effective systems. And a universal truth is that the Army is a system of systems. There's even a book written by, I think, either CGSC or the Army War College about how the Army runs. And you have to learn about those systems. Functional systems contribute to staff and unit success. XOs and S3s are vital to establishing effective systems, but the question worth asking is where to start if you come into a unit without effective systems?
So start with your boss and kind of ask him what his intent is. Is always, I think, a good place to start, but I don't mean to be facetious about it. But, you know, frankly, you can have the best system in the world. I mean, truth be told, but if it's not synced with what your boss wants to do or how, you know, how are he or she, take something as simple as you know, as stats and award tracking and things like that. I mean, you can have a very complicated system, but that may not necessarily be synced with what your commander is looking to do in terms of how we maintain accountability of awards and OERs. So you want to make sure that the systems and processes that you put together as a staff officer are synchronized with how your commander sees it. But I will tell you that coming into a unit without that doesn't have the systems that exist that you would like to see in place, then change them. But in order for them to change, if they've been around for a while, you're going to have to get some buy-in. Everyone will do it because you're the XO or you're the 3. I mean, we got that. But if you really want to make the system work, you know, buy-in from your ops sergeant major or your senior non-commissioned officer and some of your key staff officers as part of it is important, so you're not missing anything. The other problem is units forget their systems when they redeploy and got to start from ground zero, so historical files are important. The other thing I would tell you is it's, you know, I put this, I guess, it's okay to take ideas from other units. You know, truth of the matter is some battalions got really good systems or had good systems that I looked at and I said, I want to do exactly what they're doing because it's working for them. So it's okay to adopt your system to what you might see a sister unit doing. The other thing, though, is to make sure your systems make sense and they're not too complicated because you can easily get out of balance if you make things too complicated. If there's multiple levels of approval required for a simple action that requires the commander's signature, is that really necessary? And typically what will happen is you'll find is that, you know, there are decisions that are green tab decisions, i.e. company commander, battalion commander. So who else needs to be part of that sort of routing of that particular paperwork? Does it have to go to every Tom, Dick, and Harry, or can it go directly from the battalion, from the company commander, you know, through the S1 XO, and then, you know, to the commander kind of thing? Is so as you're an XO and you streamline processes is important. What you'll find is there's a lot of fat that you can cut away in terms of certain things. So you want to keep them as simple as possible, because we can get way too complicated. You know, I often look at SharePoint, and that's a wasted asset in many units. It's just there. Nobody uses it. Nobody knows how to do it. Nobody wants to know how to do it. So you've got to – that's an example of you got to kind of sell that to the unit and to others.
Speaking of SharePoint, sir, one rule that I learned as a S4 or even as a company creator using SharePoint was the two-click rule. If it takes more than two clicks to find it, then it's not easy to find. I've been trying to teach my cadets about building our own knowledge management systems, because we struggle with that here of changing leadership each semester and recreating the wheel, and I have to remind them, no, we made that decision, you know, previously. Let's keep the ball rolling, because we have a system that works.
Yeah, if I can comment on that. So knowledge management, you got to make the technology work for you. It's interesting. I had a peer commander, brigade commander, and they were paperless, or they tried to be paperless in the brigade. You know, in Striker Brigade, in 125, we didn't get there, and I really, that wasn't my intent to get to paperless for a number of reasons. But knowledge management is just not done well, in my view, generally speaking, in the Army. And you've got to make the technology work for you. I mean, there's so much that we do, in the Army with multiple pieces of paper and documents that we could easily do over knowledge management type systems that would expedite things tenfold. So make the technology work for you. I think how you manage knowledge, how you work knowledge management is absolutely critical to that. That's my soapbox.
It's not exciting by any means, but it's definitely important. I've just had really good field grades that have taught me the importance of that piece. But so to really, a little transition, follow-on question, to really figure out how well your system is working, you need to stress it. And we usually have those opportunities at CTCs, FTXs. But I'm curious, as a battalion or brigade commander, do you have any examples outside of those typical rotations that you used to stress your unit systems, or as the omnipresent Dr. Burke liked to say, jolt, or using a perturbation to test the system?
So I'm not sure I have anything that's particularly new or different. But, you know, a couple things that I've seen work for me, aside from our normal CTC type rotations, which obviously stress the heck out of a staff. The first is how you train your staff as a commander. And frankly, the commander owns that, but we'll delegate that often, obviously, to the deputy commander or the XO. So multiple opportunities to train your staff in the crawl, walk, run type thing is, you know, staff X's that go on that you can do in a conference room, kind of like the one we're sitting in right now. Or maybe you set up your systems in the motor pool. Maybe you move your systems out to the field. Run the day-to-day activities of the battalion from the field in order to get people comfortable with how we report over our digital systems, as opposed to picking up the cell phone and calling someone in to send in a Green 2 report or whatever the case may be. The other thing that we got to in 125, and the forcing function was really the division to a degree, was we set up our TOC in our headquarters. So all of our automated digital systems existed inside our headquarters, and as much as we could, we sent reports up through battalions, companies through battalions to the brigade, over things like CPOF, FBCB2, those types of things, using those systems. So the first time you didn't get hands-on or try to figure it all out was when you were at on rotation at one of the CTCs or you were deployed. So it's got to be just like you train battalions, platoons, companies, whatever. You've got to have a solid training management plan for how you're going to train your staff, and you've got to stress them. And then, you know, you've got to jump the TOC, and that is a significant emotional event, a lot of whining and gnashing of teeth, You know, if you do this, especially in Alaska in the winter, you're going to break stuff, blah, blah, blah. Hey, listen, we're jumping it. You got to jump it, set it up, and that's the way that you get good at that type of stuff. So, you know, that's a sort of a physical, hands-on jolting of the system. But you've got to the bluff of it all is you got to train your staffs exactly as you train any other formation in your unit.
So for our last question, we normally end each episode by asking the guests about resources that they can point our listeners to learn more about the discussed topic. Do you have any suggestions on books, articles, courses, or other resources our audience could check out to learn more about and prepare for a field grade assignment?
I do. Before I answer that, let me go back to one thought I just had. When I was at the pre-command course going into brigade command, I'd asked one of the GOs that came to talk to us, you know, where we should focus our efforts in terms of leader development at the brigade commander level. And typically the answer to that is on company commanders. So his answer was on company commanders, but also field grades. You know, his comment to me was that, listen, your field grades, they go to ILE, they get MEL 4, but it, in no way, shape, or form does it deep dive into the things that they absolutely really need to know and become experts on. So what does that mean for you guys as soon to be, you know, field grade officers and battalions and brigades? Is, you know, if that doesn't exist in your formation, it's something that you might want to talk to your boss about. I know for me, you know, my leader development program at the brigade level was focused on those two groups, those two populations, company commanders and field grade officers. And they were clear, separate, and distinct with different topics, different learning objectives, et cetera. So anyway, that's just a thought that, you know, I didn't want to leave discussed. Back to your question, though, Dave, about sort of books and whatnot. So one of the first ones, and as I was thinking about this, it's fairly obvious because, I mean, it makes sense given our discussion, but I don't know how many folks have read General McChrystal's Team of Teams, but I found that, I read that, I think it came out when I was in brigade command. He had two books come out. One, I had my captain's read. I think that was his first book. I don't think I had my officers read Team of Teams, but I read Team of Teams, and I found that book to be very, very beneficial. The other book I would tell you is probably less well known, and that's called East of Chosen by Roy Appelman. So I actually had my officers read this as a brigade commander. The focus wasn't so much on – I actually had my company commanders read this one, more to focus on the element of combat leadership at the company level and below. East of Chosen is a story about the Army on the Chosen Reservoir. The Marine fight gets a lot of the attention over the years, or has gotten a lot of the attention. This book specifically is about the Army fight, and it's at the sort of the division and below level, I guess, if you will. And the reason I, you know, hindsight being 2020, and I think that, you know, my field grades probably should have read it, because it talks about the tragedy of a formation, task force faith, and the decisions that were made at the sort of brigade, division, and Army level that led to the tragedy that occurred there. And so it's about decision-making at the operational level, even the strategic level. It's about the resourcing of success or the lack of resourcing. And, you know, frankly, I think it also talks a little bit about the intestinal fortitude, and I left this out when I talked about it, but when I talked about the characteristics of a field grade, but the intestinal fortitude to go to your boss and say, hey, sir, this ain't going to work, and this is why. And Reed's unsolicited opinion on this is that, you know, if someone would have stepped up and told the powers to be, and maybe they did, I don't want to be accusatory, it's easy to make that comment here, that this is probably not a good idea, things could have turned out a bit differently. But anyway, those are two that come to mind.
Well, sir, that pretty much wraps up our interview. I think, speaking for Wes, I definitely learned a lot just this interview, and have several notes to share. We'll make sure we capture a lot of this in our show notes. I just want to thank you for your time again as our second, or I'm sorry, our first time repeat guest.
Yeah, as I said to you all before we came on the air, you know, as a repeat offender, I'm not sure whether, well, I'm obviously honored to be here, and I'm very excited about it. But I hope, you know, I hope I have an opportunity to be the first three-timer. So I'll be standing by. Not that I want to put any pressure on you guys.
Well, I think we learned some of the value of this podcast medium to share LPD sessions and just the value of having these discussions. I got contacted by one of my peer captains in Kuwait who said he's using the podcast to help run his battalion LPD program. So that was very helpful. That was our vision when Mike and I sat down, and Wes included, over a couple drinks down at Columbia discussing this type of stuff. So I'll wrap up with this quote. I think Wes found it. It's an anonymous quote from a 1930s staff manual. It says, "The final test of completed staff work is this," and I quote, "If you yourself were the commander, would you be willing to sign the paper you have prepared? Would you stake your professional reputation on it being right?" So I think that wraps up just this discussion about transitioning field grade, being a good field grade staff officer. And we look forward to moving to another discussion with jumping from colonel to lieutenant rank next week when we interview a lieutenant out at Fort Carson on adequately preparing for op order briefs. So this wraps up today's podcast episode. Please check out our future content. We're on the iTunes and Google Play platform. We want to hear from our listeners on the topics you would like to discuss, so please leave a comment on iTunes or through the CADL sponsor Facebook page at Company Command and on their Twitter handle at COCMD. The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.